his guiding light. Who did he want to be? Would he choose something that would only make him stronger, or would he choose something that would make his people more powerful? When he realized that was the real choice he was making, a smile bloomed on his face. The choice wasn't really a choice at all. He chose his people. He chose adventure. The Path of the Adventurer. Your people will follow your example and be driven to take chances and push their limits. The call of adventure is not safe, but those who survive walking it will be the strongest version of themselves. Watch well, for though your people will surely change over the years to come, the shift may also occur in the blink of an eye. Specialization level 1. An adventure, you say? Ruler bonus, plus 10% attack and defense while in a dungeon or the labyrinth. Plus 10% chance to find nodes. Settlement bonus. Plus 10% dungeon points from any source. Plus 10% dungeon loot. Leveling conditions. Generate 0 of 1,000 dungeon points. Despite his massive amount of deliberation, nothing immediately changed in the village. As the days went on, though, Richter didn't forget the quasi-warning that the very nature of his people might be altered because of his choices. The town hall wasn't the only building completed while the village prepared for war. The builders also created more housing for the village's burgeoning population in relatively short order. Each wooden longhouse only required 120 building points to complete start to finish. There was more than enough wood, tar, and thatch to accomplish the task, and with the construction crew making 212.6 BP a day, the village was able to build almost 2 a day. Richter told the builders to keep focused on erecting longhouses until they reached the magic number of 16. That was the amount required to house everyone in the village, minus the pixies, of course, in adequate conditions. It would put just under 60 people under each roof. That obviously wasn't an adequate long-term solution. Richter wanted to start building individual homes at some point, but for now, it would do. As soon as the first longhouse was completed, Richter gained a well-appreciated notification window. The housing available is now above 50% capacity for your population. Pay heed, ruler. You must provide housing before the weather turns, or you will suffer further penalties without further warning. Rule well. To the Chaos Seed, it looked like after long months of prep and battle, his village was finally coming alive. Every day his people were engaged in growing the community. It was a moment of incredible satisfaction. He had taken many risks and had predicated his dream of a village on a diverse population working together, made stronger by their differences. There had been consequences, both personal and public. People had died, and the wounds those losses had wreaked on his heart were still not healed. He had needed to make sacrifices, and there were times that he felt like giving up. Looking at his people now, though, united in purpose, even with battle on the horizon, Richter knew he had made the right choice in putting his faith in hope rather than giving in to his fears. Chapter 86, Day 148, Kuborn 38, 0, AOC. It wasn't just the surface of the village that changed over 3 days. The increased luck of the village affected everything. That was why, halfway through the third day, Bartle and Bee came running up to the Forge of Heavens, looking for Richter. Crom started shouting at them for rushing into his domain just before the Chaos Seed saw them. Both scholars ignored the dwarf, and Bartle shouted, "Eureka!" Richter's face wrinkled in confusion. Not because he didn't understand the word, but he just didn't understand how the scholar knew the word. Wasn't it specific to Earth? Then he thought about it. Maybe not. He looked it up once, and it was just thought to be attributed to Archimedes. Maybe Eureka was ubiquitous. Then again, Bartle was talking in common speak, and maybe it was just the equivalent word that Richter was hearing. Then again, maybe he just let his ADD get away from him again. He was pretty sure it was the last option, because the scholar talked for an entire minute without Richter hearing a word thanks to his short bus stream of consciousness moment. After asking Bartle to repeat himself, Richter found out that one of the village researchers had had an epiphany. Ever since building the House of Scholarship, there had been a plus 1.2% chance of the village having a scientific breakthrough. B explained that the closer a tech got to being fully researched, the higher the chance of a member of the research team having an aha moment. An epiphany wasn't just a lucky breakthrough. It was actual magic at work. Apparently, the researcher in question had, for a moment, quite literally glowed. Then the scroll the researchers had been recording their progress on had started to glow as well. The missing information was filled in as the universe awarded the research team the remaining 51 research points needed to finish. With an excited grin, Bartle handed Richter the scroll, and a prompt appeared as he unrolled it. Know this. Anyone relevant who belongs to your settlement will now be able to access this information. Congratulations! You have researched Predict Auspicious Times 1. Your people can now predict specific cosmic alignments that will give extra effects to weapons and armor that are created in the Forge of Heavens. You are guaranteed to identify at least one instance per month. It will also give hints to the specific circumstances required to trigger these effects. This tech will only work inside the core building and will only predict up to 1 month in advance. You have researched one of seven ranks of this tech. Researching higher ranks will extend the range of your predictive ability and allow for a greater number of auspicious times to be predicted each month. As of now, only you have access to the bonuses provided by this tech. Access the interface of the Forge of Heavens to provide access to others. Richter immediately accessed his interface and gave access to Crom. He also made sure that Crom would be able to extend permission to whomever the dwarf saw fit. The smith wasn't close by, but the Chaos Seed chuckled as he thought about how Crom's salt-and-pepper beard was probably splitting with a grin as he read the prompt. Hopefully this would give his villagers an even greater advantage in battle. Being guaranteed only one auspicious time a month didn't seem like much, but the benefits of triggering the core building's special ability gave unique bonuses. If he was reading it right, the number of predicted alignments wasn't limited to one a month. It was that at least one auspicious occasion per month would be foreseen. With luck, there might be more. He could also research the second rank of the tech if he wanted to improve the odds of getting a special weapon or piece of armor. Finishing the research begged an obvious question. What tech would they unlock next? Richter accessed the research tab on his village interface. He was once again humbled by the vast sea of knowledge that existed. The science interface looked like a miniaturized version of the village, sitting like a bubble underneath a sea of gray mist. Around it, eight spheres hovered, pushing back the fog. Two of these spheres were glowing, indicating that they had been researched. More globes branched off them, also pushing back the mist. Saying he had barely scratched the surface of available techs was generous. When Richter zoomed out, it became clear that the science his village had access to was less than 1% of 1% of 1% ad infinitum. Research was another area where his limitless ability gave the village an advantage. Most settlements were restricted from researching techs because they were specific to other races. Elves could not research Minotaur-specific techs, for instance. His ability removed that restriction. The Mist Village could one day become the most knowledgeable settlement in the land, but, of course, that possible future would still require blood, sweat, tears, and massive amounts of time. Zooming out on the science interface also showed the one other open spot that had been cleared in the ocean of gray mist. The area around his miniature village and this other area lit up like lamps seen far away on an especially foggy night. The second set showed the knowledge he'd been given by the Tephanim Queen about building portals. As he was the master of his settlement, it was also added to the research interface. Unfortunately, he couldn't just add the tech of anyone else to the village. Randolphus, for instance, had paid close attention to the inner workings of Eve's monarchy for nearly a century. While he wasn't a professed scholar, the spy had told Richter that he did understand a good deal about certain technologies. The village couldn't access his expertise, though, not until certain prerequisite techs had been researched. The Chamberlain wasn't the only one who had knowledge that could help the village. Annalise had revealed that she understood the tech Mining One well enough to benefit the village. As the precursor to that tech had not been revealed yet, though, it was only of use to her alone. The other thing that complicated the issue was that each settlement had a unique approach to knowledge. The starting tech a community had access to varied due to the race of the settlement, its location, and many other factors. While in some communities, mining might be one of the first techs made available, in the Mist Village, it might be revealed by researching Farming One, or it might not be revealed until a series of other technologies had been researched first. Randolphus told him that anyone who had a formal job in the village would automatically advance techs once they were revealed, almost like a freebie reward for choosing the right people to take positions of responsibility in his village. Making the Chamberlain town administrator would yield massive gains in research in the months and years to come. But until the prereqs were researched, the technology and the perks it offered remained frustratingly beyond reach. Richter wasn't one to dwell, though. Instead, he focused on what he could do. He immediately dismissed the idea of researching any more portal technologies. The cheapest among them required nearly 33,000 research points. A quick check of his village's research potential showed that pursuing any of those would be a long wait for a train don't come. Available research points, RP, 0. Daily earned research, 14.63 RP per day. 1. 1 point per ley lines, 4 total. 2. 0.1 points per level of research skill, 9.3. Research rate modifiers, plus 10% rate for House of Scholarship, level 1. Instead, he focused on the techs branching off from the representation of the village. Each tech showed up on the interface as a globe. They were also assigned a tier, which showed how many connections they were removed from the miniature village on the science screen. All he could see were the techs branching off the village or techs that had already been researched. He never knew if advancing the village's knowledge would reveal 5 new options, as it happened when he'd researched the Forge of Heavens tech, or if it would be a dead end, like what had just happened with Predict Auspicious Times 1. The village's latest scientific advance had revealed no further science spheres, but the name of the sphere had changed to Predict Auspicious Times 2, allowing the village to research the second rank of the tech. Mist Village Science Tree. Farming 1. Increases yield from cultivated crops by 5% total. Animal Husbandry 1. Increases the health of your animals by 5%. Usable products from domesticated animals are also increased by 5%. Requires your settlement to have domesticated animals. Soldiery 1. Increases the learning curve of your soldiers by 10%. Also increases attack and defense of trained soldiers by 5%. Requires a barracks. Unavailable. Construction 1. Increases building speed and building durability by 5%. Requires a workshop. This tech provides new blueprints. Mason's Shop, level 1. When built, will decrease waste and increase efficiency when quarrying stone. Increases usable yield of local quarries by 10%. Increases productivity when quarrying stone by 10%. Logging Camp, level 1. When built, will decrease waste and increase efficiency when logging. Increases usable yield of local wooded areas by 10%. Increases productivity when harvesting forests by 10%. Enchantments 1. Opens the possibility of learning, altering, and creating basic enchantments. Astronomy 2. Gives a basic idea of the movement of the stars, planets, and other cosmic bodies. Branching off of astronomy, Astrology 1 gives a rudimentary understanding of how the movements of the cosmos can predict events in the land. Forge of Heavens unlocks a branch of research that is specific to your core building, the Forge of Heavens. Unique. Branching off of Forge of Heavens, Learn Enchantments 1 increases the chance of the Forge learning new enchantments by 5%. Predict Auspicious Times 2. provides increased knowledge of specific dates and times to forge weapons and armor in order to obtain extra effects, at least 2 a month. Elementum bonus to spell barriers 1. Increases the spell barrier penetration of Forge of Heaven weapons by 20%. Elementum bonus to spell resistance 1. Increases the spell resistance given to each piece of armor by 2%. Basic Spell Theory 1. Provides a basic understanding of the magic of the basic elements and ley lines. Metallurgy 2. Decreases the amount of metal needed to make arms and armor by 10%. Tech advanced by 1 level due to inherent knowledge of villager in the job smith. Requires access to smithy. Branching off of metallurgy. Alloy 1. Increases the likelihood of discovering new alloys with increased capabilities when experimenting with new combinations of metals. Increases the durability and either attack or defense of new alloys by 10%. Requires access to smithy plus metals necessary for experimentation. Metals used in this research will be slowly consumed. Smelter 1. Increases heat in the smelter, allowing for greater malleability of worked metals. Increases production speed of forged items by 10%. Smithing Tools 1. Increases the caliber of all smithing tools by 10%. Increases the chance of your smiths to create arms and armor of higher quality by 10%. The fact that there were so many techs available was too much of a good thing. He was almost grateful that researching Predict Auspicious Times 1 hadn't revealed more options. Richter also decided not to invest more precious research points into that branch of science until he saw how it manifested itself. Similarly, the other 3 Tier 3 technologies that branched off the Forge of Heaven's tech were a bit too specialized in Richter's opinion. He wanted the next scientific breakthrough to help the village as a whole. The same argument applied to the Tier 2 knowledge stemming from metallurgy and astronomy. That left the 6 Tier 1 techs. Richter didn't deliberate long. Really, there was only one option that made sense. His village was exploding with high productivity, but there was still a great deal to do and build. He decided to keep the good times rolling. The Mist Village has begun research on Construction 1. Progression, 0 of 132 RPs. Predicted time to completion, 9 days, 32 minutes, and 29 seconds. Rewards, increases building speed and building durability by 5%. This tech provides new blueprints. Mason's Shop, Level 1. When built, will decrease waste and increase efficiency when quarrying stone. Increases usable yield of local quarries by 10%. Increases productivity when quarrying stone by 10%. Logging Camp, Level 1. When built, will decrease waste and increase efficiency when logging. Increases usable yield of local wooded areas by 10%. Increases productivity when harvesting forests by 10%. The village wouldn't finish the new research until after the battle with the Lich Lord, but 9 days wasn't that long. Once the tech was known, it would not only boost the speed the buildings went up, it would also make 2 precious blueprints available. Both level 1 buildings would increase the village's efficiency even further. Richter had a feeling that very soon his village was going to undergo a mini-industrial revolution. Even before the buildings were completed, the influx of professionals started changing the village in strange and unexpected ways. The first thing people noticed was the boost to meals they consumed every day. The new cook, a high elf named Taco, had bought a talent called natural flavor. Every meal tasted significantly more savory. The improved food caused a plus 0.1 uptick in the daily morale changes that Richter could see since the town hall had been built. Everybody's day was better with good grub. The cook didn't know any recipes yet, but he was determined to learn some. The good news was, it was much easier for cooks to discover new recipes than it was for crafters to discover new templates, or for smiths to discover new schematics. The bad news was, Taco's experiments led to some negative gastrointestinal consequences. Richter had to stop Crom from beating the man with his hammer after a meal involving dung moth wings caused a burning case of mud butt. The Chaos Seed actually made it a royal decree that that particular ingredient was never to be used again. The experience wasn't a complete loss, though. The Smith's threats prompted Taco to buy 2 ranks in the culinary invention talent, which significantly increased his chances of creating his own recipes. The elven cook was also able to create an open quest for any herb gatherers or hunters who brought him ingredients that were uncommon ranked or above. The XP the quest provided was apparently only in the 10 to 20 range, but as it was repeatable, the cook was already helping to level the village as a whole. The only downside, in Richter's opinion at least, were Taco's experiments. The first problem came when the elf served something he called 3-penis soup as an after-dinner snack. There were so many complaints that the Chaos Seed had to take time out of his day to figure out what was in it. The elf revealed that it was a chowder of sorts, made using squirrel penis, badger penis, and deer penis. He did admit that the deer penis was doing most of the work. Richter was so horrified that he just walked away. On day 3, though, he put his foot down. A royal decree was proclaimed stating that fermented liver was not to be served at any meal, no matter what animal it came from. The other professionals also made their presence known. Mini-quests were popping up all over the place, but there were also direct effects. Joseph, the chandler, started rendering animal fat and local flowers into candles. He bought a talent, fragrant smoke, that magnified the scent coming off his burning candles. It did a great deal to help the funk factor in some of the longhouses, which also increased the morale of the village by plus 0.03 per day. Jeremiah the Soaper helped in that regard as well. The two men actually worked side by side in making their items. Jeremiah purchased a talent called Clean Living, so anyone that washed with his soaps got a bonus to their health. It helped ameliorate the daily decline in village health that came from having so many people living in one place. When the Soaper handed out the first batch of his product, Richter could see the daily health change in the town hall interface improve from minus 0.02 per day to minus 0.01 per day. The lumberjack, Baron, purchased 2 talents immediately, Axeman and Boarding. The first increased the speed with which he could harvest trees, and the second let him turn each length of tree into 4 usable units rather than just 2. Baron also triggered a new settlement quest for Richter, to make a sawmill which, when completed, should help to advance the Chaos Seed's administration skill. Shyvana dove back into building Richter's warship with gusto and told him that it would be ready in 2 weeks or less. It would already be done, but she had taken very seriously his instruction to change the vessel from the trade barge it had initially been designed as into a warship. She promised it would be a strong weapon of war when she was done. The sailor, Jerry, was already working with a few villagers and teaching them the basics of seamanship in anticipation of getting on the water. Once the ship was ready, Richter wanted to start exploring the surrounding territory by boat. Then, when the crew was confident in their capabilities, at long last it would be time for a trading mission. Either to Eve, or the Wood Elf Kingdom that Hisako had mentioned, or perhaps all the way down to the southern tip of the River Peninsula to open relations with the island kingdoms, the Twins. The newly minted miner, Poltan, and the recently freed miner, Annalise, were both leading teams in the iron mine. That, of course, led to a renewed quest to clear the second level of the mine. The first floor had been cleared of monsters, and Tarad had assigned a strike team to patrol it regularly, but the second floor still needed to be secured. Richter promised them that it would be a priority after the Lich was dealt with. Glorin had become a regular fixture in the Forge of Heavens, and already had several new enchantments, including Life Attack. He could only enchant up to rank 1, but he was practicing every day to progress to rank 2. The elven enchanter had invested his talent points into increase enchantment potential and was saving up to purchase increased number of enchantments so that he could duel in spell like Richter. He also volunteered to go hunting with the warbands each day so that he could power level and earn more talent points. It was a profound relief to Richter having someone else to shoulder the enchanting load each day. The maid, Tiffany, quickly became a favorite around the village. Her launder talent not only made the village washing go faster each day, but also restored some durability points to people's clothes. As most of the villagers only owned one set, that was huge. She also organized several other villagers into a cleaning squad. Her head matron talent allowed her to organize a team of workers beneath her, much as Roswan could organize builders. The four-man team washed and scrubbed with all the perks of her journeyman's skill rank in cleaning. Tiffany apparently ran a tight ship, but Richter noticed that the longhouses and his own floor in the catacombs were quickly approaching spotless. The daily change in village health ticked up again and actually moved into the positive range, increasing by plus 0.02 per day. Having professional hunters meant they were bringing in larger game. The yield from their kills even increased, thanks to one of them purchasing the quartering talent. The skins the village had access to also jumped a rank in quality due to Hunter Radil buying the skinning talent. Even better, the hunters had started helping with village defense by increasing their tracking capabilities. Richter planned to negotiate with Hisako after the battle to secure a few more cloaks of concealment like the one he wore. The boost to hiding in any terrain would allow his hunters to journey past that 10-mile radius of mist. Richter wanted to know more about what was happening outside of his domain. The farmer, Dano, chose three practical talents: faster crop growth, crop resistance, pests, and crop resistance, disease. The first increased the speed at which the village's crops would mature by 5%, and the other two decreased the number of plants lost to either insects or blight. Neither of the last two had been a large issue yet, but Richter easily saw the wisdom in such preventative measures. The carpenter, Yulin, worked on building the longhouses under Leslie the Gnome's direction. In addition to making the woodwork go faster, he had also invested in the talents Burnished Glow and Wooden Art. The wood in the new buildings was now so polished that it literally shone with a soft light, and it gave the longhouses a warm and cheery glow at night. The villagers sleeping in the new longhouses reported having a better night's sleep, and soon there were squabbles about who would sleep in the good ones each night. Wooden Art let Yulin carve animals and other figures into the wood of the buildings he worked on. It had another daily effect on morale, increasing it by plus 0.03 per day. Randolphus said such measures would also affect a city mechanic called Beauty that would be available once the village leveled up. He told Richter that Beauty would affect morale, loyalty, tourism, and diplomatic relations with other settlements, among other important aspects of village life. Burke didn't have much to do yet as village locksmith, but he did start making locks and lock picks for Richter, as well as giving him a few lessons in the art of bypassing them. The Chaos Seed was able to learn lock picking, a skill that was extremely similar to disarm traps, but with subtle differences. Burke also teamed up with Yulin to build secure chests. The courtesan, Anara, was fascinating to everyone who looked at her. So much so that there was no doubt there was magic at work. She had pale white skin and nearly jet black hair. Her mysterious little smile had set more than one man stammering. From what Richter could see, she also had a sploosh effect on more than one village lady. When Richter had asked if she felt like coming to chill in his room, she had just trailed her finger along his jawline and given him a quest. That was how making a tavern-slash-pleasure house became a major priority. Randolphus assured Richter that while a courtesan could do some very interesting things in the bedroom, they were also ideal candidates for either diplomat or spy jobs. It didn't escape Richter's notice that Inara was often seen with Burke, asking for more complicated locks to pick. The Cordwainer Woodhouse was a squirrely older man with liver spots who, to Richter, looked like someone who'd gotten beaten by a time stick, but there was no denying that the man made a comfortable shoe. His talent soft soles had Richter feeling like he was walking on air. He'd come to expect a certain amount of discomfort when wearing his armor, especially in his aching feet. Thankfully, being leader of a village had some lovely perks, including the occasional foot massage that went to completion. Now, though, with Woodhouse's shoes, he was able to run for an hour in his armored boots before he started to cramp. That didn't stop the nightly happy endings, of course, but it did help his bunions. Making a comfy shoe wasn't the end of Woodhouse's contributions, either. Richter had doubted how useful a cordwainer would be, but the profession actually had many practical talents, increased comfort being the least of them. Cordwainers could make shoes that didn't leave a trail, even through crisp snow. The talent slick shoes left an oily wake behind you that enemies could slip in. There were shoes that made you run faster, shoes that made you taller, shoes that could walk on water. Cordwainers could make them all. Woodhouse said it was even possible to make shoes that gave the power of flight, though the man hadn't unlocked any talents that allowed for that yet. The talent that Richter got most excited about, though, was within the old man's grasp. Richter had had to give the cordwainer his rug in trade. The guy just wouldn't shut up about fetching rugs for some reason. But then the old professional purchased spring steps, as well as the prerequisite talents that led to it. Spring steps let Woodhouse create shoes that increased the base height of the wearer's vertical jump by a foot, which was just what Richter needed to help augment his cloud running skill. At level 10, cloud running increased his base jump by 20%. With spring steps, the bonus was even more pronounced. Of all the skills he had gained, he had to admit that cloud running was easily the most fun. It greatly increased the efficiency of his running by letting him glide over the ground. He could run faster and use less stamina while he did it. The problem came when Richter tried to jump up more than once. The skill let him push off the air to do a double jump like the white shinobi. The awesomeness of this fact was completely lost on Sion when Richter tried to explain it. The sprite had absolutely no problem laughing when his friend wiped out again and again, though. The KSC discovered once again that there was a very large difference between having a skill and having the expertise to put it to good use. The entire village heard about how their lord tried to add a spinning flip to his jumps and ended up suffering a rather serious head injury when his stamina bottomed out. That did not dissuade Richter from practicing, though after that, he did try to do it away from prying eyes. Cloud running let him jump, then jump again using the air like a springboard. The problem was, while his initial jump off the ground only used about 5 to 10 stamina, the next air jump cost 3 times as much. The third jump cost 3 times that, and so on. Even choking down stamina potions wouldn't help, because the fifth jump cost 400 to 500 stamina. He quickly found that there was a ceiling to how high he could get. Richter's superhuman strength of 33 let him have a vertical leap of over 6 feet if he really put his all into it and he wasn't wearing armor. Now, between the plus 20% jump boost that his 10 skill levels in cloud running provided and his new shoes giving him another foot of air, he was clearing more than 8.5 feet from rest. That meant, in ideal conditions, he could clear over 40 feet by performing 4 jumps. Even attempting a fifth would bottom out his stamina and risk losing consciousness. After nearly blacking out at a height of 3 to 4 stories, he decided that bottoming out wasn't something he should do lightly. It didn't help that Alma wouldn't stop laughing her scaly ass off for a full hour after she healed him. Thankfully, going down was much easier than going up and did not have the same stamina penalty. Jumping sideways to maintain an elevation only increased the stamina required by 100%, and there was only a 50% cumulative penalty when doing a series of controlled falls. Even with the reduced price, it still drained stamina faster than the Chaos Seed would like. Still, Richter found he really enjoyed sliding down through the air like a skier on a slope. He had the bright idea to combine his jumps with climbing by cloud running near a cliff face. The heavy stamina penalty only applied when he was jumping off liquid or gaseous surfaces. The problem was, physics was as big of a bitch as she'd always been. Putting the lie to every Super Mario game ever, he could not jump away from the cliff and then in midair change his direction so that he ended up next to the rock face again. The idea was relatively possible because it let him jump from one spot on the rock to another in a straight line, but it relied on him quickly securing another handhold. Jumping away and jumping back presented the same problem. He had to grab a handhold before his glide time ran out. Even if it worked, holding onto a cliff face drained stamina by itself, and his regen rate wasn't so high that he could be sure that waiting would replenish his reserves. Richter could see a scenario like that going real wrong real quick, and the consequence would be skydiving without a parachute. Practicing with the new skill showed Richter the importance of investing stat points into endurance. Cloud running was an amazing skill, and according to Randolphus, a rare one. It was a stamina hog, though. Even though he'd engaged in plenty of hand-to-hand combat since coming to the land, Richter had mostly relied on clever tactics and magic to win his battles. He now saw the wisdom in bolstering his physical resilience as well. Hoping he wasn't making a mistake, Richter invested 6 of his attribute points into endurance. As soon as he did, he felt slight changes in his body. His muscles seemed to tighten, and his weight felt more evenly distributed. He also felt wide awake, like he'd just downed 4 shots of espresso. The other 12 attribute points from his recent leveling, he kept in reserve. He was sorely tempted to pour them all into endurance as well, though, thanks to his daily educational opportunity with Randolphus. Richter had thought rogue training would involve catching flies with chopsticks or walking over rice paper without leaving a trace. Nope. It mostly involved a biomage standing by while the two men fought with short blades. Without armor. Randolphus illustrated again and again the difference between having skill levels in small blades and actually having expertise in using them. He didn't teach Richter specific blade forms like Yoshi did, but he did have 1,000,001 dirty tricks. It was the kind of education you would get knife fighting in back alleys, not fighting on a battlefield. Richter quickly learned the necessity of having a life mage nearby when the spy literally punctuated his lessons and Richter's mistakes with the pointy end of his blades. The Chaos Seed grew to hate the sound of Randy's cultured voice dispassionately shouting, "Medic!" while his lord bled out on the ground. They also did a great deal of stealth training, which involved Richter stalking through the forest, trying to make his way back into the village undetected. Time and again, he would feel a blade pierce his thigh or arm, and once, his left butt cheek. He would try to counterattack, but even turning as quickly as possible, the most he ever saw was a wisp of black cloth as Randolphus stealthed again. Each time, though, the spy left an infuriating whisper in the wind, "Do better." Richter made no progress in learning the secret rank perk of stealth. But one thing that he did succeed at was a practice that Randolphus called chi hardening. It was a technique that made it harder for others to learn information about him via analyze or other means. Richter had to thicken his physical aura to do so. As he already had a great deal of expertise manipulating his magical aura with imbue arrow, and more recently had practiced using his chi with stun arrow, he grasped the fundamentals fairly quickly. Randolphus told him it was not a perfect defense, but it would make it harder for him to be read. Keeping that information away from enemies just might save his life. Ideally, Richter would unconsciously keep his aura thickened all the time, even while sleeping. That would only come with practice, however, possibly years' worth, according to the Chamberlain. Richter was in the middle of one such sparring session when a blazing red prompt appeared. He stepped back, and the expression on his face made Randolphus start searching the area for enemies. The danger wasn't to either of them, though.
Dungeon Master Richter, the Barrow of the Chaos Serpent, calls for aid.
Chapter 87, Day 148, Kuborn 38, 0 AOC. The intense red color of the prompt wasn't the only reason it stood out as abnormal. It also flashed dangerously in his vision. He had never gotten such a sense of menace from a notification window before. He didn't even have time to react before the prompt appeared again.
Dungeon Master Richter, the Barrow of the Chaos Serpent calls for aid.
Richter focused on it, and more information appeared.
The Barrow of the Chaos Serpent calls for your aid as its defender. Max party size is doubled for the duration of this crisis. Exceeding max party size will cause all immunity to be removed. Anyone entering to fight with you is given immunity to dungeon monsters and traps. No loot can be claimed or resources gathered from the dungeon, or that person's immunity will be removed. Spoils of war can be gained from the dungeon invaders without penalty. Breaking any of these regulations will cause that person to be marked with the curse of the Barrow of the Chaos Serpent. Failure to destroy this specific threat will cause loss of your dungeon mastery. This could lead to the monsters breaking out of the dungeon to wreak havoc, or even the absorption of the dungeon mouth by the labyrinth. Protect your dungeon.
He could lose his dungeon? His people might be attacked by labyrinth creatures? What was happening? Richter shook off his shock at the knowledge he just absorbed. He knew he had to make a split-second decision. He could cast dungeon transport and arrive at the Well of Offering in the next few seconds. The question was, what would happen then? Whatever the hell the danger was, he had to assume the worst. As badass a fighter as he now knew Randolphus was, the man had sounded cautious and maybe even fearful when he had discussed the monsters of the labyrinth. If some of those had indeed invaded the dungeon, Richter and Randolphus probably couldn't handle it by themselves. No, he couldn't just rush in. He had to arm up with the best the village had to offer and gather the strongest fighters and casters that he had. Richter started running towards the Forge of Heavens, and Randolphus sprinted behind him. While he coasted on air using cloud running, he sent a message to his familiar. Alma, go find Hisako, Yoshi, and Sion. Tell them there was an emergency and ask them to meet me at the village gate immediately. The Dragonling had been flying above him, but veered off towards the Quickening, the usual haunt of the Hearth Mother. She took off like a bullet, her body already glowing yellow as she cast weak haste. As soon as he got to the forge, he started snapping orders. You, Richter singled out one of the human smiths. Drop what you're doing and run up to the dragon's cauldron. The guards might stop you from going up into the meadow, so give them the code phrase, thank you, Bill Paxton, and tell them to come with you. Give the same phrase to Tabia and tell her we need every health, mana, and stamina potion she has. The guards will help you carry them down to the village gate. The man stared at him in surprise for a moment, but then raced off to do as he was told. Richter made a mental note to change the village passcode again, and turned his attention to the village smith.
What be the trouble, your lordship?
Crom asked. He was holding his hammer in a way that said he was ready for anything. It wasn't the enchanted ebony war hammer that had been handed down through the dwarf's family for generations, but Richter had no doubt he could still do serious damage with the simple high steel tool in his hand.
I'm not sure, but there's trouble in the dungeon.
Just let me don my chainmail, he told him, moving quickly towards an armor rack.
No, my friend, Richter told him quickly. This enemy might be beyond any of us, and I won't risk the best smith in the village when there are others that can swing a weapon.
Crom opened his mouth to protest, his eyes flashing angrily at being sidelined, but Richter held up a hand. I need you to make sure all of the village non-combatants make it up to the Northern Meadow. Do this for me. If I fail, you and the guards will have to keep our people safe. Do this for me.
The dwarf shut his mouth with an audible clack. His eyes were still angry, but he nodded and started shouting orders of his own. Futon floated up in response to Richter's mental summons. He gave the remnant an order as well. Go to the training ground and find Tirad or Calder. Tell them we go to battle in 5 minutes. Tell them to meet me by the village gate and bring only the professionals.
As you wish, my lord,
came the deadpan reply before the glowing orb floated off. While he normally moved at the speed of a walk, Futon could travel at the speed of a run if the situation called for it. Clearly, this time, he felt the situation called for it.
What can we do, Lord Richter?
Another smith called out. Someone run to the healer's hut and tell Sumiko that I need her and her best healers at the village gate in 4 minutes. Tell the other healers to go to the Northern Meadow and prepare for possible casualties. Everyone else, run through the village and tell everyone you meet the same thing.
With those orders given, Richter walked over to the heavy elementum chest, only to be intercepted by Crom.
I will do as you command, your lordship, but if a battle is a lumen, then ye will have the best I can offer. This were going to be one of the three gifts before you went to battle the lich, but the other's na be ready yet. I had to buy a talent, weld magic, to make this, but I think you'll agree that be worth the price.
Crom took out a sword contained in a beautiful wooden sheath that had been lacquered black. Though he couldn't see the blade, the hilt was ornate and familiar. The Chaos Seed took the weapon and unsheathed it. When he did, The light in the forge dimmed, and heat seemed stolen from the air. A moment later, the visual disturbance and sensation faded away, and all was as it had been. Richter examined the beautiful instrument of death in his hand. As soon as he saw its power, he spent the necessary gems to soul-bind it to him and him alone. You have found Black Ice. This darkstone blade was forged by Bowden of the Mist Village and enchanted by the village master Richter. The hilt was recovered from a pile of the dead. Created from the dimensional bones of a greater shadow demon, this hilt and the blade that was once attached were wielded by the dark paladin T'Klor. A fragment of the demon's soul is still bound to this item. Using this hilt will shroud the wielder in shadows, greatly increasing their base concealment stat. Whosoever holds the weapon also benefits from some of the demon's powers. The more lives this weapon claims, the greater the powers it can unlock. The culmination of these events has produced a named weapon. You hold Black Ice. Level 1. Attack, 29 to 36. Durability, 317 of 317. Item class, rare. Quality, superb. Weight, 6.9 kilograms. Traits, plus 10% damage versus spell barriers, plus 9 to 10 earth damage, plus 200% versus air, plus 300% versus crystalline, 7 to 8% chance to disarm, 3% chance to shatter, plus 4 to 5 water damage, plus 100% versus fire, 4% chance to freeze. Wounds inflicted with dark stone will fester and interfere with mana regeneration. Hilt bonus. Your weapon hungers. Feed it to increase its powers. Plus 1 dark magic per 5 skill ranks in dark magic, independent of charge. Charges, 468 of 468. In the hidden caverns of the Northern Meadow, after Richter had slain the dark aberration, he had found a room full of bones and items left over from centuries of the monster's victims. It had almost all been trash, but Crom had saved a few pieces, this random hilt included. Crom had affixed the hilt that Richter had found to the darkstone blade Bowden had forged. Richter had had no idea it would actually be valuable. He didn't really understand why the blade had gone from being scarce to rare, but then he saw the hilt bonus. It was a god's damn scalable item. Richter didn't really know the significance of having a named weapon. Crom told him he couldn't answer that. Each named weapon was unique, and only fighting with it would reveal its nature. Even without that info, the blade's enchantments, coupled with the dark damage from the hilt, were huge. It was also a scalable weapon, so even without its named status, it would get stronger the more he used it. Crom told him that scalable weapons could grow in many ways. They could level with their user, absorb the energy of slain creatures, or require new components to be added, among many other methods. Black Ice fell into the second category. Crom, Richter was at a loss for words. The smith had sacrificed precious talent points to make this weapon. The village was truly lucky to have such a dedicated man.
Yar, dinna make it weird, Crom told him gruffly. Just go kill things.
The dwarf turned away, muttering under his breath. Give a man a blade and he turns into a wee lass. Richter smiled after the gruff dwarf. Another smith brought him a shoulder harness for the sword. Every smith in the village knew that Richter didn't like wearing a sword belt. The story of him trying to walk with one, only to fall 3 times in quick succession, was still chuckled about. That done, he raced down to the village gate. A few minutes later, everyone was assembled and Richter filled them in on the prompts that he'd received. He told Hisako and Yoshi that they, of course, did not have to come. It was his village and his dungeon that was being threatened after all. The hearth mother just waved his words away and asked what the plan was. Richter looked to Randolphus, as the man had the most experience of any of them by far. The spy had nothing to add, though. The Hall of Elemental Hunters has not had a master for centuries. I have never been called to defend a dungeon before. Labyrinth monsters would occasionally enter and cause a bit of havoc, but the dungeon in law is so large that its own monsters would overwhelm any interloper if given enough time.
Adventurers mostly avoided those sections of the dungeon until the labyrinth creatures were slain. To be perfectly honest, running from labyrinth monsters has always seemed the best course of action.
Great, Richter thought. The badass spy's only advice was to run away from the very monsters that they were about to run towards.
He addressed the group gathered before him.
I have no idea what we're about to face. Believe my next words, everyone. Even though the rest of you are my villagers, none of you has to come with me. I only want Tirad,
Calder, Sion, and every single other person took a deliberate step forward. Richter's heart swelled with pride.
With a firm nod, he said, "Then let's do this."
Dungeon transport only had an effective distance of 5 yards from him, but that was enough for the group he was taking into the barrow. With his party size doubled, he could take 10 with him, not counting his companions. It meant he could bring his whole varsity squad. His defenders included the warriors Kath, Yulindi, Ygritte, and Wisteria. Except for Yulindi, they were all melee fighters, and each was wearing the best weapons and armor the village could provide. His 3 village mages were also present, Sumiko, Zar, and Quasia. Hisako, Yoshi, and Calder rounded out the 10 count. With Richter and his companions, that brought the total up to 14. The smith he had sent to the dragon's cauldron arrived with the potions, and Richter made sure they were handed out. The magi also cast buffs on the party, increasing their health, attack, defense, and speed. The spells weren't cheap, and the mages downed 2 blue mana potions each right afterward. He also handed out potions of clarity from his bag of holding to every party member. Everyone drank the sparkling, clear fluid, each hoping they would live long enough to enjoy the +25% experience boost. With the preparations done, Richter cast his spell. Tendrils of mist rose from the ground, encircling them all in a gray-white bubble. 9 seconds later, they appeared in the entrance chamber. Richter quickly looked around, but saw no immediate threat. The throbbing red warning signs that kept popping up in his vision proved the danger had not passed. The shimmering energy field that led into the rest of the dungeon was still there, though, which Richter hoped was a good sign. The Chaos Seed drew black ice and strode through the portal, his party close behind. Devastation met his gaze. Most of the red columns were in ruins. Richter hadn't even been sure that they could be broken, but only a few still remained whole, the rest shattered or snapped in half. The bodies of Corran Tuskers and Jennet Prowlers lay strewn about the cavern. In many cases, they were just pieces left of the dungeon monsters. Spear-like projectiles nailed one prowler to the broken remains of a stone column. Whatever had thrown the weapon had done so hard enough to embed the javelin 2 feet into the enchanted stone. Immediately in front of Richter lay the 2 ragged halves of a large tusker that had been torn apart. Richter had no idea how a creature that had to weigh 0.5 ton could have been torn in half. Then he heard the roar. It was a deafening, earth-shaking bellow of rage. More squeals and howls echoed from the same location, at the heart of the chamber. Even though many of the columns had been damaged, enough remained whole that Richter could not see the source of the noise. The rest of his party appeared out of the portal behind him, and Alma launched herself from his shoulders. She gained altitude immediately and flew directly towards the center of the cavern. Seconds later, Richter saw what they would be fighting. His eyes widened in shock, and 2 dueling feelings swelled in his chest, fear and excitement. Richter turned and looked at his party.
It's a rancor.
That probably wasn't the creature's real name, but he'd be damned if that wasn't what it looked like. Richter had to fight an irrational desire to look up, just to be absolutely sure that Jabba wasn't looking down on him through a ceiling grate. The labyrinth monster was about 30 feet high with gravy brown skin. Some of it was ruffled in places like a bulldog. It hunched over like an old person, but there was nothing frail about it. The thing's muscles were so large that it almost looked like there were tumors in its arms. Arms that were so long they could drag along the ground. They ended in gigantic 3-fingered hands tipped with 4-foot talons.
Its head was the size of a pickup truck, and its face was pinched like it had been sucking on a sour ball. With its massive fangs, though, Richter was sure its primary food source was warm and bloody. Prowlers and tuskers were attacking it, but the creature wasn't alone. Six other monsters that Richter had never seen before were running around the Rancor's feet, fighting the dungeon monsters as well. They looked like a cross between a hyena and a dog. Their hairless skin was matte gray, and massive quills traced down their backs like mohawks. They had sharp talons on each paw, and their two front feet each had a long dagger-like spur that they were using to eviscerate the attacking dungeon beasts. Dozens of beasts were attacking the labyrinth monsters, but dozens more already lay dead. The labyrinth monsters were unfazed, just attacking with abandon. Richter saw the largest monster almost casually pick up a fully grown adult tusker. Its long talons pierced the side of the pig beast, letting dark red blood trace down its arm. With no hurry at all, it put the squealing creature into its mouth. One strong bite was all it took to rip away the tusker's leg and most of its side. Blood fell in a torrent, splashing to the ground beneath. The red fluid was being sucked up like it was water in a desert. The dungeon was using that blood to restore some of its power, instinctually trying to regain enough energy to spawn even one more beast. It was fighting a losing battle. Even though Richter had been warned about how dangerous the labyrinth's monsters would be, he was still taken aback by the intense savagery of the battle. Quickly pulling out his traveler's map, he showed everyone the images Alma was sending him. "Have you ever seen these things before?" he asked Randolphus. "No. That means little, though, my lord. The labyrinth has an endless supply of horrors." Hisako had nothing to add either. "Okay, then," Richter said, thinking quickly. His heart was pounding in his chest in anticipation of battling some of the land's worst monsters. "We could wait, try to separate the monsters and take them down one at a time. As long as I read the prompt right, the dungeon monsters are on our side for now. Or, at the very least, I don't think they'll attack us. If that's the case, then waiting is a mistake. We need to attack while we still have allies. I say we get in there now, try to kill the little ones, then take out the big ugly one." "You do realize those little ones are still bigger than us, right?" Sion asked, not liking what he'd seen on the map. "Got any better ideas?" Richter asked. The ensuing silence was all the answer he needed. "That's that, then. Warriors, take out the smaller ones, one at a time. Tarad and Calder, protect the casters. Sumiko, reserve your mana for healing. Everyone else?" He shook his head a bit helplessly. "I'm sure you know what to do. Sion, old buddy, let's make this opening salvo count." The Chaos Seed sheathed his sword. Then he retrieved his bow from his bag of holding. Taking a quick breath, he placed a multi-shot arrow of shattering on his bowstring. The other two archers did the same. "Let's sneak closer, using the remaining pillars for cover. Once we're within range, I'll sneak a peek and use Analyze. If there's any relevant information, I'll let all of you know. Otherwise, we imbue and shoot. Yulindi, fire at the same time we do." Everyone nodded, and the group moved forward, as silently as possible. Snarls, bestial squeals of pain, and a cackling laugh echoed through the cavern. Through Alma's eyes, Richter could see that the last sound was coming from the six hyena dogs. She was perched, unmoving, against the stalactite half of a broken red column. Her constant visual feed let him keep track of the battle. The dungeon monsters were obviously outclassed, but at least for now, they were making up for that in numbers. The hyenas were bleeding from multiple wounds, and one was actually buried under a pile of 8 genet prowlers. The dungeon's beast defenders were getting the worst of it by far, but at least they were making the invaders feel the pain. Richter silently hoped it would be enough. He did not want to lose his dungeon. The beasts, though completely ineffectual against the larger monster, did keep all 7 labyrinth creatures occupied, so the party was able to make their way to the edge of the battle without being detected. Heaving one last sigh, Richter adopted stealth. Then, poking his head around a pillar, he saw the monsters with his own eyes. Somehow, it was always worse than when Alma sent him mental images. He used Analyze on the smaller ones first. Name: Chupacabra. Disposition: Amused.
Chupacabras are pack monsters that are known for their speed and ferocity. They are said to feed on pain as much as blood and flesh. The spines on their back and claws on their feet can rend even plate mail. As a labyrinth creature, they have grown to massive size and power. Special attack, piercing quill, can fire the quills on their backs at high speed at distant enemies. Level 42, health 1,879 of 2,076.